Let's hear it for the boys. Let's give those boys a hand. I am a hand. I'm Alex.
I'm two hands. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And Pete is three hands in a duffel bag trying to
Lift
sneak into
us
an R-rated
up where
movie.
We belong.
Anyway, we are going to be talking about The Boys, Season 4, Episode 4, Wisdom of the Ages. If you haven't watched it, it is on Prime Video now, so go check it out because we're going to spoil it. But brief bit of recap here. The boys are investigating the Seven. That was pretty brief, right? I think
that was faster than the show.
Covered everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Wow.
Investigating is doing... The word investigating is doing a lot of lifting.
It sure is. But what actually is happening here is the big plot of the episode is that Dakota Bob wants to push through this anti-soup law. And the soup side is kind of pushing against it. But we have two trains running there. One to sort of fight back against this and discredit Starlight. Firecracker has a rally across the street from the Starlight House that ends in the worst fashion possible with Starlight freaking out after she has her abortion revealed kicking the crap out of Firecracker. Meanwhile, backstage in the locker room, somehow Butcher tears Ezekiel the Preacher to tiny little bits, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. And then over on the other side, speaking of tearing people to bits, Homelander goes Homelander and visits the place where he was raised and proceeds to also tear everybody apart and burn them and laser their dicks and, you know, things like that. Just like regular stuff.
But he brought a Fudgy the Whale, so I don't know. I think he's fine.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I think the biggest event of this particular episode, and I know I'm skipping past a lot of things, finally, after four episodes, Huey gets covered in blood. It hasn't happened yet this season. He does. He gets sprayed multiple times. I was waiting for it. We can wrap the season up now, move on to season five. I'm good to go.
Wow.
Yeah, right, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that maybe the bigger thing is Simon Pegg is alive. So I think that's important for a lot of people.
Well, this is actually true in real life as well. But yes, by the end of the episode, Huey's plot line is he wants to get Compound V to bring his father back to life. He ultimately decides not to use it, but it certainly seems like by the end of the episode, his mom used it instead. And in fact, Simon Pegg, after cashing that sweet paycheck for four episodes, wakes up and gets that money.
Mm-mm. Oh, man. You know, you got to put in some work for it, I guess.
This episode was interesting. It felt like the first three were sort of like a standalone movie, and this was like sort of a hard reset, introducing maybe the things that are going to be driving the rest of the season. And it felt different in so many ways. The direction felt very different. Even the writing felt different. It's just such a different vibe to this episode.
Good different or bad different?
I don't know. I thought it was fun. I liked that there was a different kind of vibe. It seemed a little bit like there was a lot of information that we got, but also things colliding in funny ways. Like Ashley meeting A-Train in Homelander's place was a fun colliding of worlds.
She followed up on Cameron Coleman's suggestion to leave a floater in his toilet, which
upper
is
decker.
Disgusting. Not an upper decker.
That's disgusting, Pete. That's
disgusting.
Too far.
No.
We don't know where the floater was.
A floater and an upper decker are two different things, Pete. I hope you know the difference.
I do know
that. It would be crazy to be like, someone left a floater in my toilet, and you meant an upper decker.
Yeah.
Because like that's an upper decker is like a second whole level of revenge.
That's true. It is.
A floater is just gross, and you press a button, and it goes away.
And it's gone.
Upper decker involves... hands-on activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm surprised the show didn't go for an upper decker.
Yeah, that's why. You know, when they said floater, I was just assuming, like, you know, a floater in the upper decker because that would be worse. But, you know,
maybe. Well, but Pete, you go in both tanks every time, right?
Yeah. Pete, this is making me question inviting you over. You say using the bathroom.
It's too late. I've already been to your place. I've already, you know what I mean? Oh, man.
Give me 2 minutes. I got to check the top of my toilet tank.
I will say this Ashley A-Train alliance, I guess, while we're talking about it, is interesting. I'm curious to see how that pans out. I also thought the little details that A-Train finds out were interesting.
Oh, yeah.
He finds the secret stash of pubes. He also finds the secret stash of breast milk that Homelander is keeping as well.
That milk is old looking.
I think it's new. You think it's Madeline Stilwell's milk?
Some of the tops look, well, that's the, every breast milk is different. Yeah, and some of those containers look literally crusted over.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think, you want mommy's milk. You don't want random milk.
Yeah, you want some mommy milky.
Right? Oh my God, what is happening? Who are you guys?
Who are us guys? You're the guy who doesn't know the difference between a floater and Upper Decker.
I'm going to use the bathroom. Pete, no, wait. I have 4 questions to ask you.
Yeah. Okay, can I use your sink instead? Is that cool?
See, that's exactly what we need to talk through. Every hole is different.
A-Train plotline, I think, continues to be very interesting as well, particularly his relationship with Huey in this episode. Their whole... not actually alliance, but being like, hey, we're good. The scene in the alleyway towards the end, and I wanted to ask you guys about this because I thought this was very interesting. So he goes through the whole experience that he goes through over the course of the episode. He kills a man, watches him die. He's getting the V for his dad. He feels like that's the only choice he has. And at the end, A-Train hands him the V and is like, we're not actually going to be.
Yeah, you're going to tell me to go fuck myself. Yeah. You're
going to tell me to go fuck myself. He starts to leave, and Huey's like, you know what? No, we are. And they shake hands. Why do you think Huey did that? What do you take away from that? Well,
it's awesome. Sorry, Justin, if you don't mind, I jump in here.
I'm Upper Decked me in some way.
Yeah, I just Upper Decked you a little bit. I think that
we'll get to you later. You're the floater of the podcast.
It's impressive what is happening here. The fact that Huey and A-Train are kind of almost on the verge of becoming cool with each other, maybe friends, would be phenomenal because of the fact that A-Train murdering his girlfriend right in front of his hands, eyes, however you want to say it, ran through her. The fact that like he is being nice to him
biologically speaking, they were both in front of him. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying that like it's really smart and impressive that that's where we started, and that's possibly where we could end up. Is really impressive.
And there it was, appeared right in front of my hands.
I disagree with you, Pete. I disagree with you because I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think there is any full redemption for any member of the Seven, and I don't want to see A-Train and Huey just like chilling out and having a good time and drinking beers together and it being part of the crew. I could see A-Train getting to a place where he sacrifices himself for the greater good, or he does something truly selfless for the first time and non-transactional. I think that would make sense, but in a very different way, but very similarly to the Deep, where we can never forgive him to what he did to Annie in the first season. I think it's the same thing with A-Train. He has the original sin of the show, at least, which is running through Huey's girlfriend. They might say they're good, but I don't think... I don't need to see that next step of A-Train as one of the good guys now.
Well, that's interesting that you don't believe in that redemption, because I think the deep will forever be punished because of who he is, what he did, because what he did is sort of, I think, an example of how he is. And we get to punish him constantly, and that's the fun of that character. A-Train, he ran through Huey's girlfriend, but he did it by accident. Like that's not who he is. That's just something that happened. So I do think he's able to be redeemed. And I also think the way A-Train's story is going, he's desperate for a home. And he's desperate for someone a lot like Ryan and Homelander in some ways. They need something to be different so they can have a human connection. And I think Huey is just a good person. And he's like, you know what? And he's learned a lot here from forgiving his mom, at least to some degree. I think that he's like able to forgive A-Train here, and A-Train, it really hits him in the same way that Butcher dealt with Ryan and was like, I'm not going to drug him. I'm going to connect with him. I think that's what we get here with Huey and A-Train.
All right. That's fair. I think my my hold up is he's done a lot of other bad things at the same time, but I understand where you're coming from.
You mean random killing of people.
Right. Yeah, just that stuff, but no bigs. We could talk.
I mean, Huey killed someone.
This yeah, Huey's
but that was a shining light terrorist cell member. It's okay. It's fine.
The person that A-Train killed was Todd.
No, but A-Train didn't kill Todd. A-Train just brought Todd's body.
Well, but A-Train killed someone else, didn't he?
No, he didn't. He held back.
He didn't.
Yeah. His true moment of redemption, I think you guys would say.
Wow. Someone's got to say Red Redemption or something at this point. We've come so close to
Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anybody needs to say that. Why don't we turn to a character that doesn't need any redemption at all, who is Homelander. We knew something bad was going to go down when he said, I need to go back to the start. I need to get rid of my humanity in the last episode. And in fact, he goes back to this lab, brings a Fudgy the Whale. Good start.
Oh, very great. Good start there. That's the greatest start you can do for anything.
Let me ask you a question. Fudgy the Whale or Cookie Puss?
Fudgy the Whale.
Really?
Hey, guys, I think they're pretty much the same thing.
No, one of them has an ice cream cone on it. I mean, it's completely different.
And one of them has a cookie, right?
No, Fudgy the Whale.
I just laid a perfect trap for you guys, and you fell for it immediately. get out of the way.
We work for the Carmel Corporation.
You idiots. I know how to lure you in a Wile E. Coyote style situation.
You want to hear a couple of fun facts about Carvel that I learned recently while we're on it? So what?
Actually, I don't think so. You've known them your entire life.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sure. My quick fun facts about Carvel, the origin of Carvel, which I thought was kind of neat, was Tom Carvel, who started the company. He paid his wife $15 to get a truck, drove it around for almost 5 years and made no impact until one day on Memorial Day weekend, his truck broke down. He's like, well, guys, guess I got to park here for the day. And that was the day he sold out of all of his ice cream. And so he stayed at that location. And that's where the first Carvel was. And he was able to actually build up the company from there. So
where did he break down in front of?
On the pier. That's where he first saw a real Fudgy the Whale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In the ocean.
Where did he see Cookie Puss?
Yeah. There was a horrible melting whale.
Yeah. Space. Cookie Puss is from space. We all know that. He's a space geek. Yeah. Anyway, back to Homelander. So he brings the Fudgy the Whale. I don't want to get caught in this loop again, but he brings it. It's good. We all love it. Let's move on.
I really struggle with that cake not saying home sweet Homelander. I would have been very tempted to have it say that.
Yeah, yes. But that would have been hard. He would have had to like call ahead for that. You know, home sweet home is probably available when you walk in. You know what I mean?
A lot of people gifting Fudgy the Whale for their open house. Is that?
I have so many questions for you. I don't know, Pete, you were saying so many very crazy things. You think every Carvel you walk in and there's a one that says home sweet home there. The idea of calling ahead, how many phone calls are you making to Carvel?
Oh my God, so many.
Pete has the best speed dial.
Yeah, I call them just to make sure they're still open. You know what I mean?
Can you guys kiss all the fudgies on the mouth to go to sleep tonight for me?
Quick, real quick. I know like in your Fave 5, which is still a thing that you have on your old food plan, you have Carvel, Baskin Robbins, Cold Stone. Who are the other two?
Pete?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what's happening here.
I would think it's Ben and Jerry.
Nice. Yeah, well, I don't know what Fab Five is or what you're talking about.
Wow, you're not up on old phone campaigns, Pete.
I can't even believe it.
All right, can we actually talk about this Homelander thing? So he goes into the lab where he was raised. He's looking for Barbara, the head of the lab. She is one of the triumvirate with Stan Edgar and Vogelbaum, I believe, was the other guy. Edgar is in prison. Vogelbaum, if I remember correctly, killed in the first season, so they're off the picture. But we get a bunch of things about how he was raised as he slowly kills off members of the staff before confronting Barbara. Everything in here was so harrowing to watch, but so well done.
Agree. Yeah. This at the end of last episode, when it was like he's going to go back to where it all started, I was thinking this is going to be like a potentially redemptive journey where he was going to like come to grips with some of the trauma that he went through. And instead, he goes there and further fractures. He goes there and is just killing people in the most torturous way possible. And it was a bummer because Frank had the hoops, man. He's got the skills.
Frank, you want to come in here for a second? Oh, man, as soon as he starts calling people over, that was a nightmare. It was so well done in the fact that, like, Homelander's trying to be nice, but, like, everyone's going to die. And you kind of know it, and it's just so tense. But
why do you think he's trying to be nice? He's not trying to be nice. He's torturing
them.
Yes. Yeah, but he starts by being like, hey, I got cake for everybody. Hey, guys, I got cake. It's great to see you. Frank, Carl, oh, my God, how
he's
you doing?
He's luring them into a false sense of security before he pulls out the trap and absolutely destroys them.
Right. But he could walk in and just be like, you're all going to fucking die. The fact that he got Fudgy the Whale that says home, sweet home. I mean, there is just
That's the first bit of sadism, is that he brought in the Fudgy the Whale and not the Cookie Puss, just to get back to that.
And if you want to know how to set a good trap.
You're like, oh, I don't want to keep getting stuck in this, but I'm going to keep bringing it up.
Pete, if you want to understand how to set a trap like this, just rewind about 10 minutes in this episode. I got guys on the Cookie Puss gambit.
All this stuff was absolutely god awful to watch, but shouts out to Anthony Starr as usual for being a cackling maniac while he watched a old man jerk off and then lasered him right through the penis. Absolutely awful. And then it's not even the punchline, but like the end there when Barbara's like, put him out of his misery. And he smashes his head while people are sobbing.
He steps on his skull. He smashes in his skull with his boot. I mean, that's just.
I really liked the way that Barbara came in and was like, she doesn't take shit. She knows.
She was trying to like play him, but.
She just knows what they're dealing with. The rest of them are terrified. They're like, not sure. They were just like, we didn't do this. We just didn't stop it, essentially. And Homelander, you know, blaming them for not, even though Homelander was the same then. Like, that's the point Barbara makes. It's like, hey, man, you were like this when you came to us, and we definitely made it worse and continue to torture you, but like they were scared of you then, man. Like, it's not like everything was cool. And I think that's the sort of little trick they pulled on me with the, like, I'm gonna go back, find the point where he deviated. But I think Barbara says, like, you didn't deviate, you're a monster and you always have been. And this episode just goes so hard against the sympathetic moves that we've been seeing throughout this season and series of Homelander, where we feel bad for him at points. And this is like, sort of like, why do you feel bad for him? He's a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what's interesting about that, though, is this weird idea of like, did they think they were going to try to fix him by burning him over and over again? You know what I mean? Like, they definitely were studying him, making him worse. You know,
no.
Like,
they were testing his limits because they were building him up to be the ultimate symbol of America, the ultimate symbol of the Vought Corporation. So they wanted to find out how much could he take, how hard could you burn him, how much could you isolate and starve him, and he still survives. What are the limits of this superhero? And the answer is almost no limits, except for the fact that now he's aging.
Yeah, but how do you torture somebody and then afterwards say, well, we were just testing your limits. I hope you're still going to be a great superhero after this. Like, that's
not Nazis, Pete. Like, there's a very specific shout out there. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is Nazi techniques. And there's a very specific shout out with, I think it's Frank says, I was just doing my job, which is the Nazi line. Like, we were just doing our jobs. That's what this is. I don't think they're being particularly subtle about it.
Well, and what I thought was cool about the way, because that stuff, I feel like we could intuit about him in the way a lot of this sort of show uses fascist ideation with the characters. But the part that I thought was really interesting at the end is Barbara saying, you couldn't stand the idea of us being disappointed in you. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of like they were engineering in him his kryptonite, which is needing a love that he just is incapable of achieving or feeling or sharing or anything. And that is a wild idea that they inserted, sort of incepted into him his weakness that truly we've seen, the show has proved to us that it is his weakness. And she's like, we did that intentionally. I thought that was just a nice little grace note to slide into this otherwise horrifying sequence of scenes.
Well, and I think that points to his arc over the first half of this season, where, like we talked about with the opening episode, at least to me, it was very surprising that we didn't get unfettered Homelander after he lasered a guy in plain sight. But like we talked about a bunch on the podcast, it is his narcissism that keeps him in check. He still needs everybody to love him at the same time. And this, I mean, we'll see how it goes from here, but that expression he gives when he's going up in the elevator slathered in blood, I took it as relief, where he's like, finally, I put my past behind me. So maybe this is us getting in the second half, like, nope, I'm a Homelander, no checks, no balances whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because the last thing that he needed was Barbara, who treated him like a child and wasn't scared of him, is in the bad room looking at all the blood, terrified. So he finally got her as well.
Yeah. And do you think she's just trapped in there forever now? Like,
no, I think eventually somebody will come down.
Okay.
Yeah. They'll smell the fudgy well.
I was going to say, doesn't Carvel come and do a follow-up whenever anyone is like, how was the fudgy?
They got cleaned up. Yeah. That's the nice thing about a Carvel cake, and everybody talks about it, is afterwards they come and have a team clean, you know, hose down all the dead bodies and stuff.
The Carvel fixer comes through and is like, exactly. All right.
Yeah, you have to sign 5 waivers before you buy that one home sweet home cake. Carvel.
But they do have it pre-made at the place. No call necessary.
That's what's nice.
Yeah. I love Carvel.
Me too.
Why don't we turn to other storylines here? We could probably talk about the whole Starlight versus Firecracker thing, because a lot of big stuff goes down here in a lot of twisting and turning ways. First of all, again, absolutely awful and gut-wrenching, but the revelation that Huey and Annie had an abortion, I thought was very well handled, very well done from every aspect. Obviously very hard to watch, and hard to watch Annie's response to it, but they did well, in my opinion.
I agree, and it just goes, like, this show just will not shy away from touching hard topics in the real world in this show and just sort of seamlessly weaving them in. And I thought this episode especially was sort of taking the satire and sort of almost this season feels like it's trying to teach us how to be better at consuming media and understanding why people say certain things. And that goes even beyond most satire. Like, and I just want to give the show extra big ups for that, because satire just sort of highlights hypocrisy and culture moments, flaws in our culture, to be like, expose them. This show is exposing them and also being like, see, now you can not fall for this in the regular world. And that's crazy to also do that in a show where a dude has a burned off penis.
Yeah.
What did you think about, on the same sort of note, the revelation? So they have this revelation that Firecracker had sex with a 15-year-old boy. So as usual with these sort of things, and I say as usual because this happens all the time, the people who are going after pedophiles are often pedophiles themselves. Like, that is the thing that we've seen time and again. There was the movie Sound of Silence or whatever it was, and then there were multiple producers of that movie that turned out to be pedophiles themselves. That's one instance of that, and I think that's what they were kind of playing off of there. She manages to turn it around. Like, I 100% bought that Firecracker is doing the things that she's railing against, but I was a little iffy on her being able to turn that so quickly on live TV.
Well, but I think that to me was like right out of the playbook of a lot of like right-leaning people and groups, where it's like the stuff doesn't matter anymore. It's more about the shame. Like, as long as you don't show shame to it and you continue the pattern of like, here's a crazy news story, even if you're the victim of it, but you keep the outrage, keep the emotion, and still push the pace and narrative, people are like, yes. And it because we're built in, like, these are my people, I like them, and something comes out that is, we know logically, is against our beliefs, but they're still feeding us the emotion and outrage and all that. It's hard to break out of that cycle. And that's why I thought it was perfectly done in this.
Firecracker perfectly says, you know, she hits post, then goes to her camera and is like, I did this. But let me tell you something that Starlight did that's worse. So I'm going to take this energy that maybe you're thinking about me, and we're going to put it over here on Starlight, which is exactly where I want you to be.
And just to clarify for our listening audience, in the real world, what Firecracker did is worse, and what Addy did is fine. But yes, I agree with you. That's how they're painting it in the show. We also get another moment, which it sounds like you guys are just disagreeing with my estimation here, which is fine. But I was also iffy about everybody's reaction in the Starlight house to the idea that Starlight had accidentally blinded a woman on her first save. They all seemed very put off by that, and I wasn't quite sure why.
Yeah, it was also, I was wondering if it was the accumulation of both the kind of like, oh, you had an abortion, and then also you blinded somebody. But I was also like, "What? Where are you guys? What are you talking about? Like, these soups are like murdering people. She accidentally blinded somebody." Yeah, but it's a weird kind of place of justification that you're kind of like Justin was talking about. You have someone that you think is your person, and then stuff comes out, and you're kind of scrambling. But I do. Yeah, I agree with you. I thought it was like, why is this kind of like being a thing, you know?
To me, it was a little bit of putting the light on the left and sort of criticizing the way that people on the left, wow, all this horrible dark stuff is happening in our main politics. A small thing comes out about someone on the left and the left goes after them because it's not, it's like a purity test, as a lot of people call it. And if you're not pure, you go down. And I think that was like, I know this is a bad thing, but it's, you got to look at the wider context and think like, let's keep focused on all the very horrible things happening over here with Firecracker. And instead they're suddenly like making, punishing Starlight for something that is bad, but not nearly as bad. We have a hard time making that mental leap to be like, okay, we can see all of these things in the wider picture rather than just being like, she did a bad thing, get her.
Let's talk about Butcher. Butcher has some big stuff go down this episode as he continues to see the
hallucination. Seems like the worm's getting bigger.
The worm is getting bigger. Do you guys have a theory about that? Because I have a theory. Justin?
I have. Is Butcher maggot?
Oh, maybe. Oh.
Because the way that what's his name goes down, the Firecracker's Stretch Armstrong buddy, it feels like Butcher passes out and the worm comes out and eats that dude.
Oh, wow.
That was my first thought. And that's comic book brain, because Maggot is an X-Men character who had worms inside him.
We all know
Maggot is. I think they were techno-organic worms. Of course. And they would come out and he could control them and they would eat stuff.
Yeah. By the way, just to be very clear, they weren't just worms that lived inside of him. They were his digestive system that would crawl out of his body, eat stuff, bring it back inside, and then he would be able to shoot energy there, just like the rest of
us. That makes more sense. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And I think the worm is Becca. Because the other thing I thought is like, is Butcher maggot? And then I was like, is Becca Venom? What's happening here? Because it's a very symbiote Venom relationship that I think is developing here. And anyway, I think both of those things are wild ideas that are fun to see what happens.
That wasn't the part of, I hadn't really thought about any of that. And I had thought like Becca was just a cancer-induced hallucination of his brain breaking down and everything that's going on. You might be right that it is a Venom situation instead. And I don't know necessarily what the worms are. The thing that I wanted to throw out there that I thought was very telling and pointedly put in there is, like Pete said, these worms are getting bigger, or it's a different worm, or there's multiple worms or something like that. And he says towards the end of the episode, when he sees Huey getting the V, Huey's like, why didn't you take it? And he's like, well, I did 4 months ago. Yeah. It didn't do anything. I think it did something.
Oh, yeah, he lied. He had powers for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, he was definitely strong enough to fight back Splinter in the last episode, but I assume, I don't know, he has worm powers. He can go fishing.
That's what I was going to say. I think he's got the worm. The worm is what the V did, because that's the reveal that came in. And this is what I was going to say. This episode feels so different. It feels a little disjointed in its storytelling when the first three were super clean. And part of that was like they did a lot of different filming styles with like when they were doing news, it was shot like news. Like, and that was cool. So that disjointed may have just been a function of sort of jumping genres a little bit, but there was just some moves that I like. Why did Mother's Milk suddenly bring Butcher back in without explanation?
I don't know.
That was very huge.
We missed something.
Yeah, it felt, I was like, I had to go back and be like, is this the right episode I should be watching? Because I was like, this is very weird.
Well, Huey had mentioned it, and also they had that kind of heart-to-heart. And, you know, we assumed that maybe Mother's Milk just kind of, it was like, you know, Butcher got to him and was like, all right, he's back in.
But didn't the last time we saw him together, Mother's Milk was like, no.
You're done.
Boys.
Yeah,
and this episode, to Justice's point, he was like, Ad, you're back.
Yeah, yeah, and Starlight's like, what the fuck? And Mother Smoke's like, no, 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 it's cool. We hatched this out. It was off screen.
Very weird.
It was weird.
Off screen, but that was weird. And just...
I think it's almost like someone sticking a kind of like stick into your eye. You know what I mean? Like there's a little difference. You can still see, but you're like, oh my God, am I getting a lobotomy here? Like what's happening? You know,
right. That's a great transition to talk about.
Finish talking about the Butcher stuff. There's a lot of Butcher stuff here. Yeah. Because I also thought the him revealing that he took the V was done in a very like, I took some V. Anyway, and I was like, are you downplaying this to keep us from putting it together? Because I was like, that's not what that is either. It was said, it was just the Butcher, all of the Butcher scenes just felt a little strange to me. Well, and the show also had a bunch of establishing city shots that they don't usually do. The whole episode felt a little bit more like a network show in some ways, like a procedural almost. So the feel is different. And like, I trust everyone on this show enough to make it, it feels intentional. I just don't know exactly what the intention is yet.
Well, I think to back up and talk a little bit about the Butcher and Huey conversation, I think Butcher naturally is trying to protect Huey a little bit and not telling him all this stuff. But that's interesting that you kind of notice that. And I do think that they're trying to sneakily say that there's something wrong with Butcher. Well, maybe not too sneakily,
I think there's a lot of stuff wrong with Butcher.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think that they're definitely toying with some things. Sorry, Alex.
No. We can talk about the Sage thing because we were wondering about the metal stick the last episode. And like Pete was similar to the subtle Butcher stuff subtly hinting here. She turns out to use that metal stick to lobotomize herself. Her brain does grow back, but it's basically her way of getting quick drunk. I also thought it was very pointed that she was like, you can kill me by shooting me in the heart, which feels like that's Chekhov's gun to come back later at some point. But we do get I hate eye stuff. And that scene of the deep lobotomizing her. Ugh.
But it was also hilarious because it's the deep, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And she was just like, hey, listen, you know, you can have your way with me. And he's like, I'm in. You know,
what
like,
did she say specifically?
I don't think she said you can have your way with me.
No, she said.
Let me just see if I can remember exactly. Pete, what did you want to say?
You
go ahead because I have
Pete,
it here.
Did you write it down? Say it out loud?
No, it's okay. Justin,
no, go ahead, Pete, please. Whatever you want to say. Justin's I want to give it. You, I cede my time to you.
I'll let you ass fuck me while we watch the Ray J video. So good. Great line. And the way that he turns again, like shouts to Chase Crawford. It sucks to be constantly shitty, but man, they give him these moves where he's just like, huh? Yeah. Okay. Into it, whatever you have to say. And he performs it so perfectly.
Yeah.
But this turn for Sage where she's like, just her only like reprieve is to become like dumb and not just regular dumb, but like the deep dumb is such a funny turn. And it gives her sort of the flaw that we've been chasing.
Yeah, that's
I have a feeling we're going to get an extra hard lobotomy and that's how she's going to go down.
Because we had questions about like, oh, I thought she was so smart making moves. And we got that in this episode. Like you saw Firecracker gets beat the fuck up by Starlight and Sage is like, yeah, that's what you get.
That's the pebble. First pebble down the mountain.
Yeah.
Well, no, Starlight was the first pebble down the mountain. There was that awful perfect line that Firecracker says at the beginning after Sage gives her info on Addie, where she says, when we first met, I thought you were kind of uppity, but you're one of the good ones.
Good ones. Oh,
oh God. Even saying that out loud gets me right in the heart.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end, Sage, I really like Sage this episode because I thought it got to a lot of the things we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Where she's playing everybody against each other to potentially the ultimate goal that she said out loud, which is soup dominance might be something else, but it really crisped focus that like she was playing Addie, she was playing Firecracker, she's playing the Deep. She's absolutely everybody here while Homelander is off stage in particular. I thought that was great stuff.
Also, it's nice to kind of be able to relate to somebody because, like, sometimes when people have a bad day, they like to go home, maybe watch something, drink a beer. She just takes the sticks and, you know, jams in her eye, you know, so she can get a little reprieve for a couple hours.
Cheaper than whiskey.
Just a quick line while I'm looking through my notes here before I forget it. When Addie goes to talk to Singer about supporting his anti-soups bill, her line, your ad buys during CSI Las Vegas are definitely winning over the left the TV on because they're dead demo. Great.
That's shots just like, fired. Brah! Yeah, that's just like headshots at everyone.
Yes. That was great. Kimiko tried to... text fish stick
and yeah,
fish duck.
Yeah, it was just hysterical.
So real.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, she is just so awesome. And the kind of when she's having fun or smiling, it's just really fantastic.
Well, and the immediate follow-up of that, just that I wanted to mention while I'm looking through here, but Huey being like, what am I supposed to do about my dad? And her saying, I'm sorry, but I think you're supposed to let him die.
Yeah, which he listens to that advice. He puts the V away.
Yeah, but I think I don't know that I've ever really seen something like that on TV, particularly in a superhero show. Was always we're going to save people no matter what.
Yeah,
when she's right, like at a certain point, he's been on brain death for days. You got to let him go. So hard lesson, but really well. And
was brain death really a thing? I mean, that was that's a crazy word.
It definitely is a thing.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I think we haven't learned the lesson yet. If he is brain dead and has just been his body still alive, juiced with V, I think that's what we're going to maybe get in the next episode.
Oh, no. You're talking about like he's a zombie type of thing. And then
Shaun of the Dead, man.
Yeah, I know.
Shaun of the Dead reference. We'll see what happens. We mentioned Pete was saying this earlier, but the Deep and Firecracker saying "Love, lift us up where we belong."
Oh, I mean, and then ending with that song too. I mean,
Oh wait, just... I skipped past one. The quick cut in to Firecracker on TV saying "And Kanye West."
I also highlighted that line. So funny, such a simple little.
Speaking of quick cuts, the. Kind of like tie in to the other show. And then Gen also, V. Yeah, Gen V and the Chance Perdomo RIP shout out was.
Yeah, there was actually a couple of those in a row. I wrote these down as they went through some promos. You were mentioning this earlier, Justin. They show off the V52 Expo powered by Fads for Fads clear riff on D23. In the promo for the V52 Expo, they plug appearances by Sister Sage, Homelander, Firecracker, Sam, Guardians of Gadalkin, Kate, Guardians of Gadalkin from Gen V, Adam Bork, and his picture is like, whoa, there, which is very funny, A-Train, and many more. There's an exclusive sneak peek of trading A-Train, which is enough to give Will Ferrell a credit at the end.
And I then, know, I just thought that was so funny.
As you mentioned, we get to see a promo from The Whole Truth, the show hosted by Tech Knight, who loves to have sex with holes because of his brain tumor, as we established over at Gen V. And yeah, they talk about Marie Moreau and the Gadalkin Four have seemingly vanished into a dark and gaping hole, which is a joke from there. But also, just to talk about a real world thing, since we haven't mentioned it on the podcast yet, but Chance Perdomo did very shockingly and unfortunately pass away in a motorcycle accident. A couple of months back, they're not going to recast his role. They're rejiggering season 2 to deal with that. But yeah, it was really, it was hard to see his face at that moment.
Yeah.
For sure.
Agree.
Let's turn from that to other things. What else, anything else we want to mention?
Well, we haven't talked about Huey and Kimiko's little thing. And
the office supplies fight.
Yeah, which I loved the.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Her training,
her training was intense, man.
And was this the first time we've really seen Huey kill someone in this way?
I think so. It certainly felt like that.
It felt that way, even if it's not like word perfect true. But man, because
well, he killed Translucent, so it's not the first time he's killed somebody. But it's definitely like feels like the first time he's killed a human.
And it's the first time he's killed someone as like a full on warrior. Like he does it. It's not like, because the Translucent was like sort of, he fumbled his way into it. This was like, he was fighting for his life and he won. And I think it was shot in a way, because the spraying of blood on Huey as a runner happens usually not in his control. And this is, he spurted the blood on himself. And I thought that was an interesting sort of demarcation moment of like, maybe Huey is going to become a bit more of a fighter this season.
And we also got the connection to Kimiko's past, which I think they were hinting at in the previous episodes. We see this scarred girl. It turns out they know each other, and they have a past together. So Kimiko runs away from that, and we'll probably never see her again, the end.
Well, they slowly kind of hobble away. But yeah, it was kind of crazy because she's like, I hate you. And they were like, all right, see you later. And I was like, really? You're not going to say anything else to that? Feels like maybe you guys should have a discussion and talk things out, but you're just going to walk away.
Or she could have come after her or something.
Yeah,
I don't know. It did feel
a little
weird.
She's just slowly walking away. You guys were just fighting, and then Huey walked in, and then the fight's over because Huey's here? Like, I was like, it seems
I wasn't
like...
sure about that. Also, I mean, it was funny, but I can't believe they started with Huey just running straight into a board and breaking his ankle. I was like, I don't know. That was a lot.
They had to show that he's still a goober, I think.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. It's super important to keep showing that.
Keep showing he's a goober. Anything else from the episode you guys want to call out before
Frenchie and Colin.
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ.
Situation.
Frenchie doesn't even confess to Colin, but Colin kind of figures it out based on some strong eye movement from Frenchie. And
well, no, he shows him the ankle and says, dude, it was me.
Oh, okay, I missed the ankle.
Yeah,
he showed him a little ankle. I would freak out if somebody showed me a little ankle too. Come home. I grew up in the Victorian era.
His whole family died in front of him, dude. Come on, man.
Come home. Ankle?
Come on.
Ladies, it's summer. Show a little ankle out there.
Dude, what are you doing right now?
I was born in the 1920s. That's very sexy to me.
Do we have a role that, like, things that some people say on this podcast do not represent all of the thoughts of people on this podcast?
Yeah, just post that on Instagram, Pete. You'll be fine.
Okay, great.
Real or grid?
There was
stories
a lot of ways Frenchie could have handled that.
Grid.
Frenchie could have handled that a lot of different ways, and I don't know, that may could have been the worst way to actually do that. So, but I really wondered if this. I was like, man, they're not just going to kill Frenchie here, because that would have been unbelievable.
Yeah, no, they're not going to kill Frenchie. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Anything else, Justin?
A couple other things. I love the everyone in the bad area with Homelander calling him John and him correcting him and saying Homelander.
Every
that
time.
Was a great pattern, really cool. His line, your life is in your hand, I thought was fun. I mean, great to see Butcher just sort of wrecking shit. Those are the best boys moments when the team is like absolutely out of control. They don't know what they're doing, but they know that they need to keep like fighting or killing someone, which I think is great. And the other thing, like, we get an I love you between Huey and Annie, but we need some intimacy from them. They feel like they're just not, especially with the revelation that of what they've gone through with the abortion and that being such, and Annie's going through some stuff because of all these firecracker confrontations. Like, I want a scene where we get a little bit of them together.
Yeah, agreed.
One quick thing I wanted to mention was the cut from the firecracker truth bomb special to the street where there's basically nobody there, I thought was pretty great. And again, just like a nice bit of satire on the fact that most of these rallies, they're like 25,000 people there and there's definitely not.
There's not. Yeah. Yeah,
I also want to talk about the kind of Huey's mom. You know, like when Huey was like, oh, I got to leave the room. She did this evil look. And I was like, oh, man. And then we kind of see the blue going into the dad. Do you think she like picked Huey's pocket or do you think she just happened to have V or
no,
what?
I think she had her own V.
Oh,
she works for the Vought.
Yeah, she does.
Perfumery or whatever.
Right. And with the skin creams and everything, they give like a little bit of compound V as well.
Yes. Oh, with every purchase, you get a little V.
You
get
a little V. You buy enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. If you're a diamond member or whatever. All right. Yeah.
You actually get a little. If you do a Mary Kay order, they give you a bunch of liquid meth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's how they get you.
I actually sell cosmetics for the Carvel Corporation. And yeah. They give you one Fudgy the Whale for every cans of skin cream.
Oh, yeah. I don't go out without putting a big dollop of Fudgy the Whale in my hair. It's the only way I can style it.
Was it weird for you guys when Starlight got the call from that douchebag guy who was like, I can't be seen working with you? And she got like...
President of the United States.
Yeah, and she got really upset by it. I was like, really? You're like that upset?
No, she... Here's why I thought it was very well done, the whole abortion storyline, is because she knows it was the right thing to do. Huey knows it's the right thing to do. As partners, they agreed that it was the thing they want to do, and they believe in their decision, but it's still hard to do at the same time. And having the president of the United States call you and say, I can't be associated with you anymore. This soup bill that you were fighting so hard through is never going to go through. You just embarrassed yourself on national television. Like, imagine getting that call from the president of the United States when you're already feeling vulnerable and emotional from a traumatic experience that, again, you believed in and believed was the right thing, but happened to you, is brought up on a national stage. That's awful. I 100% emotionally bought that moment.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you for really helping me get there.
No problem. That's what this podcast is all about.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Helping Pete at Boys Podcast. Newman goes anti-Starlight as well publicly, which I thought was there's trouble every which way.
Trouble in paradise is what I like to say. Why don't we talk about who was our best boy this episode? Pete, you want to go first? Who was your best boy?
Yeah, I'm going to say Starlight, the line where she's like, is that my fucking medical history? When they were showing the kind of stuff about the abortion and the fact that, you know, she, you know, kind of really just stepped up, got in her feelings, got in a huge fight, kind of, you know, wasn't happy about it. But the fact that she was really in this fight, I feel like is huge, because before and past episodes, she's felt like outside of the action and kind of every once in a while helping out or whatever. This one really kind of puts her back in the center of the group and all the action. So I felt like that kind of line at the medical history was such a, it really hit me. So that's my choice.
Justin, you're going to go with your boy Homelander again this episode.
It's hard. I mean, his performance is unbelievable every episode. I'm going to go with Butcher this episode, even though it did feel a little bit strange.
You want to go for Homelander. I just said something.
I have to change it up.
It's okay.
No. I did want to change it up a little bit because I did really like seeing Butcher being Butcher while also going through all of his horrible Venom maggot style changes. I think was nice. It sort of was the part of the episode that brought me back to this being like a full regular The Boys episode, even though it felt different.
I'm going to give it up for Sage this episode. Like we talked about, I really like the moves she's been making. It really came into focus what's going on with her, both behind the scenes and in front of the scenes as well. This was the episode I was waiting for in terms of her being the smartest person alive, because I feel like the previous things were like little moves. This was starting to be big moves here. And
so you liked what she did in front of her eye and then behind her eye, is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. I guess you were right, Pete. Fine. There we go. We revisited that. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about The Boys. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, those boys, we hear you. We see you. Wherever your eyeballs and wherever your hands may be.
Oh, wow. Also, Eminem's Big Pun shirt was nice.
Wow, way to sneak in at the end. Someone upper decked my coffee pot, Pete. Is that you?
I hate coffee.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam!
¡Mua! Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.